Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. El Cajon City Council wants to put an initiative on the ballot to crack down on alcohol sales to minors and more. We'll have a report from that hearing on today's show. The House of Representatives has passed a measure to repeal the inheritance tax, even for the wealthiest Americans. It now goes to the Senate, and we'll have details on the impacts. A new bill would give prosecutors more tools to punish those who make threats against schools. Plus, we'll have a special report today on a rumor making the rounds on the internet claiming ISIS has a training camp on the border, and why that story has been debunked by both government experts and our own special investigation. We'll have news for you today about a baby food recall and then a roundup on presidential candidates who have entered the race so far. And in honor of Equal Pay Day this week, we'll tell you what the gap in women's pay means for working women and their families. Remember when Blackwater was trying to launch a training camp out here in East County? Now, four Blackwater guards have been convicted of a massacre of Iraqi civilians, and we'll have details. Assemblywoman Shirley Weber from San Diego has introduced bills aimed at reducing police brutality claims and racial profiling. Plus, we'll have details today on Mayor Faulkner's budget for San Diego, and we'll tell you about the heroic efforts of a crowd in Spring Valley who saved teenagers from a burning vehicle. Hear about a Border Coalition rally in San Diego, and about a court ruling in the San Onofre nuclear power plant case that will affect you as a ratepayer. And then on Tribal Beat, we'll tell you about Winona LaDuc, a prominent environmental and Native American activist who will be speaking on Earth Day at San Diego State University. She was Ralph Nader's vice presidential running mate. Oh, and she's also the cousin of our Tribal Beat host, Leon Thompson. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll tell you about some hot activities across our region coming up, from Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade to Garden Tours, festivals, the season opener of Classic Car Night, and a Chubby Checker concert with a twist. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. The city of El Cajon is cracking down on liquor stores and markets that sell alcohol to minors. In 2013, the city adopted a deemed-approved ordinance with penalties for merchants who sell alcohol to minors or known drunks on a list of serial inebriates. The ordinance has had a positive impact, dramatically reducing problem alcohol sales. Citations for public drunkenness fell from 526 in a year before the ordinance to 344 after, while the number of minors found in possession of alcohol dropped from 29 to just 2. But problems remain. In 2014, the El Cajon Police Department conducted several minor decoy operations on 66 of the 79 businesses in El Cajon that sell alcohol for off-site consumption. In the sting operations, 18 retailers were found selling alcohol to the minor decoy, and 3 of the businesses sold alcohol to minors more than once. Now, the council led by Mayor Bill Wells and Vice Mayor Gary Kendrick want to toughen up the rules even further, and this time put them before citizens for a vote. So on Tuesday, the city council voted unanimously to ask staff to prepare a ballot initiative to make alcohol sale restrictions part of the city's charter. If approved, that would make the city's law to restrict alcohol sales to minors and serial inebriates very difficult to take out, Mayor Wells notes. No one spoke publicly against the ballot initiative effort, but Mayor Wells said that he and the council members have been threatened by the liquor industry with punishment if the measure is put on the ballot.
They have said that they will spend tremendous amounts of money to make sure we're never elected again. They'll spend tremendous amounts of money to punish us politically in any way they can. And that's fine. That's the American way. I get that. But we don't want you to be in a position where your city council changes or your mayor changes, and then all that hard work can just be wiped away with a single vote. If it goes into the city charter through ballot initiative, then if anybody wants to take that away, they'll have to bring back another ballot initiative. They have to go to the people and ask the people, do you want to soften regulations on alcohol sales? Do you want to soften regulations on sales to minors? And frankly, I don't think that's an issue that would ever pass.
The East County Chamber of Commerce, which supports the ballot initiative, is offering training programs to help stores learn how to comply with the law, such as spotting fake IDs and knowing when to refuse sales to intoxicated individuals. Beth Seiss, chair of the Alcohol Policy Panel of San Diego, says many business owners are scared of any law that can affect their alcohol sales. But, she adds, the truth is, though, these laws are not designed to put anyone out of business. They are designed to get problem businesses to obey the law, reduce alcohol-related problems, and create safer communities for residents and neighboring businesses. The San Diego County Binge and Underage Drinking Initiative recently conducted a public records request of 16 cities in California that have implemented deemed-approved ordinances similar to El Cajon's and found that only 4 alcohol businesses out of more than 7,300 alcohol licenses issued actually had their conditional use permits revoked or suspended due to highly problematic business practices and repeated violations. El Cajon's deemed approved alcohol ordinance was challenged by a lawsuit, but recently the city prevailed in court. Councilman Kendricks blames lax state enforcement of existing laws. Another problem is that store owners know that law enforcement decoys, if asked their age, have to admit they are under 21. But real kids are apt to lie about their age, so Kendricks wants teeth in the law to assure that stores will card anyone who may be underage. The council hopes to put the initiative measure on the ballot in 2016, giving voters the final say. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with the Capitol Report. This week, when most of us paid our taxes due on April 15th, the Republican majority in Congress is trying to push through H.R. 1105, a bill that would repeal the estate tax for millionaires and billionaires. The estate tax law has already been reformed so that only households with a net worth of $5.4 million, the top 0.2%, even pay the estate tax at all. If H.R. 1105 passes, no one will pay it. Backers claim eliminating the estate tax would spur investment in the economy, though there is no guarantee that wealthy heirs would use their inherited fortunes to start companies or hire workers. At a time of widening income inequality between the top income earners and the vast majority of Americans, this tax break would cost our nation $270 billion in revenues over the next 10 years. The effort to repeal the estate tax comes at the same time that the GOP Congress is seeking to cut Social Security, Medicare, and other programs that will benefit poor and elderly Americans.
District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis has announced her support for a measure to make it a specific crime to threaten a shooting on any school campus, public or private. It would also make a person convicted of such threats responsible for the reasonable costs of emergency responses by public agencies. The measure, Senate Bill 456, was introduced by State Senator Marty Block, a San Diego Democrat, in the wake of numerous school threats, lockdowns, and evacuations. In the last year, individuals made more than 130 threats to schools in the San Diego Unified School District alone, with additional threats to schools in East County and other areas in our region. These threats impact students, parents, the surrounding community, and law enforcement. Currently, such crimes are commonly charged as making criminal threats under Penal Code 422. This bill adds a new section to that code that is specific to schools, removing a requirement that there must be sustained fear connected to the threat. In a press statement issued by Dumanis, the DA states, "Threats of school violence have increased to an alarming rate, and individuals need to know they'll be held responsible if they make such threats. In light of the threats and number of school shootings that actually take place across the nation, students and their families have a right to feel safe." SB 456 would make these types of threats in verbal or written form or through the internet a misdemeanor, punishable by imprisonment in a county jail for up to a year, a fine of up to $1,000 or both, as well as repayment of emergency costs that can total far more than the fine. Costs range from hundreds to hundreds of thousands of dollars depending on the emergency response. In addition to diverting law enforcement staff and resources to attend to the threats, additional resources, time, and costs are often required to ensure a community is safe by shutting down targeted schools and sometimes surrounding neighborhoods to avoid a catastrophe in the event the threat turns out to be real. Senator Block notes, "Gun threats to schools force educators and law enforcement to put learning and public safety aside." He adds that false threats result in lost learning time for students, create anxiety for communities, and consume scarce education and law enforcement resources for an emergency response, hampering educators and law enforcement from what they should be doing, teaching and protecting the public. Block concludes, "It's time to hold these individuals accountable." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Miriam Raftery with a special report from East County Magazine. For the second time in recent months, a dubious claim about ISIS terrorists at our border made by Judicial Watch has been making the rounds, primarily on blogs and right-wing media sites. But fact-checkers at ABC News, Media Matters, and Snopes.com say the latest rumor is likely false. The story was published by Judicial Watch, a conservative group, on its website. Their story, published April 14, 2015, claims that ISIS terrorists have set up a training camp just over the Texas border near El Paso in Anapra at Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. The article claims its sources are a Mexican Army officer and a Mexican Federal Police inspector, and that documents purportedly from ISIS were found in Anapra. It further claims that ISIS terrorists are being smuggled across the border. But an ABC TV station in El Paso, KBIA, reports that it checked with several federal law agencies involved with border security who said the report is unverified and likely false. Moreover, an East County Magazine investigation found the photo in that story, which claimed it was a terrorist camp in 2015, is actually an AFP Getty image of Anapra taken by photographer Jorge Uzon. It was actually published in 2009 in VQR, a literary journal, in an article about a smuggler in Anapra. That story did include an incident in which men seeking a smuggler's services were mistaken for Al-Qaeda operatives, but were not. Media Matters, a nonpartisan fact-check organization, calls the Judicial Watch story spurious and notes that the story about an ISIS camp just over the Texas border was repeated without any fact-checking by Fox News host Sean Hannity and others. Media Watch reports, "Right-wing media have a history of echoing dubious Judicial Watch reports to incite fear about terrorists crossing the U.S. border." Media Watch also notes that Fox News in the past has parroted Judicial Watch's September 2014 claim that a terrorist attack from the U.S.-Mexico border was imminent, although that claim was roundly denounced by terrorism experts and rated mostly false by PolitiFact, which found a long history of doubtful and debunked claims made by Judicial Watch over various terrorist operations supposedly in Mexico, such as Hezbollah. Most widely publicized and debunked claim came in 2014 when Judicial Watch claimed that Islamic terrorist groups are operating in the Mexican border of Ciudad Juarez again and planning to attack the United States with car bombs or other vehicle-borne improvised explosive devices. That report cited several anonymous, supposedly high-level federal law enforcement intelligence and other sources. Politico found zero substantiation for any of these claims and reports that Homeland Security stated when asked about the claims, "There is no credible intelligence to suggest that there is an active plot by ISIS to attempt to cross the southern border." Snopes.com, a website that debunks urban legends and myths, also cast doubt on the Judicial Watch story on the purported training camp, stating, "This information is apparently unknown to every source other than Judicial Watch, as several federal law agencies involved with border security said the report is unverified and that it is unlikely that ISIS is in Anapra or Juarez, Mexico." So listeners, the moral of the story is don't believe everything you read and do your fact-checking before you forward rumors on to all of your friends.
This is Ed Barena with a consumer health alert. Beech Nut Nutrition is recalling nearly 2,000 pounds of baby food products that may be contaminated with small pieces of glass, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service has announced. The recalled products are Stage 2 Beech Nut Classics, sweet potato and chicken in 4-ounce glass jars. The baby foods were produced on December 12, 2014 and expired December 2016. These products were shipped nationwide. Recalled items have the number P68A inside the USD inspection mark. The problem was discovered after Beech Nut received a complaint from a consumer who found a small piece of glass in the product. The company has also received a report of an oral injury linked to consumption of its baby food. The federal government has received no other reports of injury or illness from consumption of these products. Anyone concerned about an injury or illness should contact a healthcare provider. Consumers with questions about the recall can contact the Beech Nut Consumer Hotline at 866-674-4446.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on the 2016 presidential campaign trail.
Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, Senator, and First Lady, announced Sunday that she is officially running for president. Thus far, she is the only Democrat and the only woman to declare a candidacy. Three Republicans have so far joined the race, with more likely to jump in. On Monday, Florida Senator Marco Rubio tossed his hat into the ring. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul and Texas Senator Ted Cruz have also formally announced that they are running too. Clinton announced her candidacy in a YouTube video that featured footage of working families, women, a gay couple, and a small business owner. She states, "Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So you can do more than just get by. You can get ahead and stay ahead. Because when families are strong, America is strong." This is her second run for the presidency. Mrs. Clinton has an extensive resume and has been a champion of health care reforms and women's rights through the years, though she faces controversy over deleted emails from her tenure as Secretary of State. Senator Rubio, son of Cuban immigrants, has fought to reduce the size of the federal government and also spearheaded immigration reforms and urged his party to support the DREAM Act, breaking with the Republican Party line. But he has since tacked to the right, saying border security must come before immigration reforms. He is pro-life and opposes gay marriage. He has taken a stance opposed to President Obama's on negotiations with Iran. Rubio has stated, "Conservatism is not about leaving people behind. Conservatism is about empowering people to catch up, to give them the tools at their disposal that make it possible for them to access all the hope, all the promise, all the opportunity that America offers." Senator Cruz announced his candidacy on Twitter, tweeting, "I'm running for president and I hope to earn your support." Cruz was the Associate Deputy Attorney General under the George W. Bush Presidential Administration and chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee. He has sponsored legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, and threatened to filibuster any gun control legislation. He was also a major force behind the 2013 government shutdown. He denies that climate change is man-made, opposes gay marriage and abortion unless a woman's life is in danger, and won the Value Voters straw poll for presidential candidates. The libertarian-leaning Rand Paul from the GOP's Tea Party wing is running on a platform of smaller government. He states, "Big government and debt doubled under a Republican administration and is now tripling under Barack Obama's watch. We've come to take our country back from the special interests that use Washington as their personal piggy bank." Rand, also an eye doctor, wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act and voted for a bill that would have declared life begins at conception and banned all abortions. He has been outspoken in favor of restoring civil liberties, however, and wants to eliminate TSA airport screeners. The New York Times counts at least 9 Republicans reported to be seriously considering running as well. They include Florida Governor Jeb Bush, the brother and son of 2 ex-presidents, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie of Bridgegate fame, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, ex-Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and Carly Fiorina, the former Hewlett-Packard CEO who previously ran unsuccessfully for governor in California. On the Democratic side of the aisle, those considering a run include former Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, former Senator Jim Webb, and ex-Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. 2 prominent figures have announced they are definitely not running for president in 2016. Mitt Romney, the GOP nominee in 2012, says he's definitely not running, so don't expect a Western White House at his La Jolla home. Senator Elizabeth Warren, a consumer champion who has taken on big banks, also denies any plans to run despite efforts by progressive groups to recruit her as a presidential candidate.
April 14th was Equal Pay Day. The date was chosen to show how many extra days each year women must work to earn the same as men. This year, women didn't catch up with men's earnings last year until April 14th. In 1963, President Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act because women were paid just 59 cents for every dollar earned by men. But 52 years later, things have improved only somewhat. Today, women earn 78 cents for each dollar that men take in. Working mothers are paid just 71 cents on the dollar that men earn. That means the annual wage gap for mothers is the equivalent of 126 weeks of food, 6,600 gallons of gas, or 11 months of payments for home mortgage and utility bills. For women of color, the disparity is even worse. 64 cents on the dollar for African American women and 54 cents for Hispanic women. California women fare better than the nation economically, but still not at par with men. In California, women earn 84 cents for every dollar that men earned last year, which still leaves a wage gap of $8,183. That's why Senator Barbara Mikulski, Democrat from Maryland, has introduced the Paycheck Fairness Act. It helps close the pay gap by empowering women to negotiate for equal pay, closing loopholes courts have created in the law, creating strong incentives for employers to obey the laws, and strengthening federal outreach and enforcement efforts. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with news about the sentencing of Blackwater security guards convicted in the slaughter of Iraqi civilians. Many in East County may recall the successful battle waged by rural residents to halt a Blackwater paramilitary training camp from being built in Potrero. Just months before Blackwater announced plans to cancel its Potrero project in early 2008, news had broken that Blackwater guards had been accused of massacring innocent civilians in Iraq's Nisour Square on September 16, 2007. On Monday, a federal judge sentenced four Blackwater guards convicted of those crimes to long prison terms. 31-year-old Nicholas Slatton was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison for firing the first shots. Paul Slew, Evan Liberty, and Dustin Hurd, all in their 30s, were sentenced to 30 years on multiple counts of manslaughter and attempted manslaughter. The guards were found guilty of killing 14 of the 17 Iraqis who died that day after the guards opened fire. A fifth guard testified against his former colleagues, and he has not yet been sentenced. Blackwater had over $1 billion in government contracts, ranging from protecting diplomats overseas to clandestine counterterrorism operations at the time. The company founded by Eric Prince, which has since changed names multiple times, has also been involved in training law enforcement officers for multiple agencies across the nation. The shootings occurred after a car bomb detonated in central Baghdad, near where Blackwater's security team was escorting a U.S. official. The convoy drove to a secured area, but then disobeyed an order from Blackwater's command. The team's leader directed his team to leave the green zone and set up a blockade in Nisour Square, a busy traffic circle where the shootings took place. Witnesses provided emotional testimony on both sides. The defense claimed the Blackwater guards, serving as private contractors for the U.S. government, were shot at by Iraqi insurgents and fired in self-defense. But dozens of Iraqi citizens and several former Blackwater employees testified that the shootings were actually unprovoked. An FBI investigation of the killings found at least 14 were unjustified. The victims included a mother who pushed her daughter to safety and was then shot and killed herself. Another man was peppered with a hail of bullets while he lay dying, unarmed, on the street. A third was shot with his hands up, the New York Times reports. Federal prosecutor T. Patrick Martin called the shootings nothing short of an atrocity. Jeremy Scahill, author of the book Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, reacted to the news with this statement, Democracy Now! Reports. People who gunned down innocent Iraqis must answer for their crimes. So, too, should those who sent them there to kill at will. Scahill visited East County during the Potrero controversy to speak about Blackwater issues and meet with local residents to hear their concerns. Those convicted defiantly assert their innocence, Slew told the court. I know for a fact that I will be exonerated, in this life and the next. Hurd stated, I am very sorry for the loss of life, but I cannot say in all honesty to the court that I believe I did anything wrong, according to the New York Times. UT San Diego suggests those convicted could yet have hope to win freedom through a presidential pardon, noting that George W. Bush commuted the sentences of two Border Patrol officers convicted in a shooting, and they served just 2 years. The Nisour incident led to a temporary suspension of Blackwater's rights to work in Iraq and led Iraq's government to call for compensation for victims and their families. Iraqi officials ordered Blackwater to leave Iraq, and in 2009, the U.S. announced it would not renew its security contract with the company. Congress held hearings on damage done to U.S. security interests. Congressman Henry Waxman stated that the Blackwater controversy demonstrated the perils of excessive reliance on private security contractors. An investigation by a House Oversight Committee found this was far from the only case of violence involving Blackwater and that 80% of the time, Blackwater fired first. In 2007, the United Nations released a report finding use of Blackwater and other private contractors amounted to having them perform military duties as a new form of mercenary activity, and that this was illegal under international law. But the U.S. never signed the 1989 UN Mercenary Convention banning mercenaries' use, nor did we sign a protocol added to the Geneva Convention banning mercenaries from participating in hostilities for private gain. In Monday's sentencing of Blackwater's four guards convicted in the Nisour Square killings, U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth called the massacre a wild and unprovoked act that could not be condoned. Here in East County, the news has validated concerns raised by those Potrero residents over Blackwater's track record of violence and confirmed the views of those who voiced relief that Blackwater did not become their new neighbor.
Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, who is a San Diego Democrat and an African American, has introduced two bills aimed at stopping racial profiling and bringing accountability to shootings by police. The measures are sponsored by the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU. Assembly Bill 619 would require the Attorney General to publish a report on how many people die in police custody and send that report to the legislature. Assembly Bill 953 would establish a racial and identity profiling advisory board and also require local police departments to report data on traffic and pedestrian stops to the state attorney general's office. Weber issued the following statement on her introduction of the bills. In recent months, the deaths of unarmed black men and other people of color by police have forced us to confront some ugly truths about the persistence of racial bias in law enforcement. She continues, "One of our best defenses is information. Currently, this information on these incidents isn't provided publicly in a comprehensive way." Weber says the goal is to reestablish trust between law enforcement and communities of color by requiring that data be collected and published on such incidents, she concludes. "We can shed light on the scope of these problems and hold these bad officers and departments accountable while also finding a set of best practices when law enforcement gets it right." On Monday, supporters rallied outside the state capitol in Sacramento to urge passage of the bills, which come in the wake of numerous nationally publicized police shootings of unarmed African Americans. But representatives from law enforcement groups claimed the legislation would bog down police with excessive paperwork that could take police officers off the streets to meet the standards, the Sacramento Bee reports. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Mayor Kevin Falconer has released plans for a $3.2 billion budget for the next fiscal year focused on services that he says give more San Diegans and more communities the opportunity to succeed. San Diegans will see more street repairs, better parks, and more equality to neighborhood services, so your community is thriving no matter where you live, the mayor adds. The plan includes repairs of 300 miles of streets as part of the mayor's goal of repaving 1,000 miles of roadway over the next 5 years. Hours will be extended at 16 of the city's busiest recreation centers, where upgrades will also be made to playgrounds and lighting, as well as expanded programs for preschoolers and teenagers. In addition, the mayor's plan calls for staffing a new fire station in Mission Valley and a temporary fire station in the Skyline area, which a grand jury had singled out as in need of faster emergency response times. After-school programs and high-speed internet access at libraries will also be expanded. Falconer also aims to update 9 community zoning plans, though it's not yet clear exactly what those changes will entail. The $3.2 billion budget reflects a substantial increase from last year's $2.97 billion budget due to increased revenues from property sales and hotel taxes, among other items. Next up, the City Council will hold hearings on the budget, with a vote on a final proposed budget slated for June. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
3 young people trapped in a burning car that flipped over after a crash in front of Monta Vista High School on Monday owe their lives to courageous bystanders. The car hit a traffic light just a quarter of a mile from a Cal Fire station in Spring Valley. As firefighters and paramedics approached the crash scene, they saw smoke and flames, and then witnessed an amazing sight. About 20 people were turning over the car, which had rolled onto its side. Bystanders then pulled the driver and 2 passengers to safety out of the burning vehicle. CAL FIRE Captain Kendall Bortiser said firefighters extinguished a blaze in the engine compartment, UT San Diego reports. The three occupants of the vehicle, all minors, were transported to a hospital with minor to moderate injuries. The California Highway Patrol is investigating the cause of the crash. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barreno with a Crime Beat report. A former NFL running back serving time for beating and choking his girlfriend in San Diego is now suspected of murdering his prison cellmate. San Diego police had offered a $1,000 reward for information leading to the capture of Lawrence Phillips, a former Miami Dolphins and San Francisco 49ers player, after multiple violent assaults on his girlfriend in 2005. In 2009, he was sentenced to 31 years in prison for the assaults and also for driving his car into three teenagers during an argument after a football game in Los Angeles the same year. Phillips' cellmate, 37-year-old Damian Soward, was found unconscious at Kern Valley State Prison early Saturday morning and died Sunday evening at a hospital. Soward was serving a term of 82 years to life for first-degree murder. If charged and convicted of Soward's murder, Phillips, who is 39 years old, could find himself behind bars for the rest of his life.
The Southern Border Communities Coalition, or the SBCC, held a rally in San Diego on Tuesday to announce a day of action to stop border brutality on May 28th, the 91st anniversary of the founding of Border Patrol. The date coincides with the 5th anniversary of the killing of Anastasio Hernandez Rojas, a father of four children killed by border agents. On May 28, 2010, Rojas, a longtime resident of San Diego, was beaten, shot with a taser, and killed by border agents at the San Ysidro Port of Entry. An eyewitness recorded the incident, and the video became national news, heightening allegations of brutality by Customs and Border Protection, which has reportedly linked to at least 30 deaths. The cell phone video showed Rojas on the ground, surrounded by agents, handcuffed and still being tasered, calling out for help. He died of a heart attack, the medical examiner found. The Border Patrol claimed Rojas facing deportation was uncooperative and that the use of force was justified, NBC News reported. The Department of Justice opened a criminal investigation in the Anastasio case. Nearly 5 years later, criminal proceedings are still pending. Seeking justice, Rojas's widow, Maria, and their children filed a civil lawsuit in March 2011, alleging that agents brutally killed her husband and violated his constitutional rights. A press release issued by the Southern Border Communities Coalition, which represents over 60 organizations in border states, claims the government has repeatedly attempted to obstruct and delay the civil court proceedings and is now attempting to delay the case even further by filing a frivolous appeal before the case even goes to trial. The release notes that over the last 4 years, to keep from having to go to court, the government filed a motion to keep the agent's identity secret, and another to indefinitely halt the discovery process of gathering evidence until after criminal proceedings would conclude. The judge denied both of these motions. The federal government also filed a motion for summary judgment to throw out the case, arguing that the agents were immune from civil liabilities because they did not violate constitutional rights. The judge denied that motion too, finding sufficient evidence in the record to establish the violations alleged. The government has filed yet another appeal to the Ninth Circuit that could delay trial by several more years. Maria and her children, through their attorney, have asked the district court judge to proceed to trial despite the appeal. A decision on the filing is expected any time now. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
A federal judge has ruled that a lawsuit filed by Citizens Oversight on behalf of ratepayers challenging the San Onofre Settlement Agreement should be heard in state court, not federal. A U.S. District Court judge issued the tentative ruling with prejudice, meaning plaintiffs will not be able to amend and refile in federal court if the ruling stands. Oral arguments are being heard this week, but only on the fair hearing issue. Merits of the case won't be allowed. Citizens Oversight, an El Cajon-based watchdog group, argues that saddling ratepayers with shutdown costs for the flawed nuclear facility amounts to an unconstitutional taking of billions of dollars. The Public Utilities Commission approved a settlement that charges ratepayers 70% of the $4.7 billion costs to shut down the reactors after radiation leaks were found. Recent state and federal probes have been launched into former CPUC President Michael Peavy and others after revelations of secret communications with utility companies. Peavy had backdoor dealings with Southern California Edison over the San Onofre settlement, creating the appearance of favoritism for the utility.
Among other questionable conduct, Peavy held a secret meeting in Warsaw, Poland, with an Edison executive, and notes obtained by Citizens Oversight from that meeting are similar to terms later approved by the CPUC. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting today's Tribal Beat. Internationally acclaimed Native American and environmental activist Winona LaDuc will be the keynote speaker at San Diego State University's Green Fest on April 22nd. She will appear at Montezuma Hall in the Conrad Prebys Student Center at 4:30 p.m. The speech is free and open to the public. LaDuc is the executive director of Honor the Earth, the largest indigenous environmental organization in North America, and the author of 6 books. She is Anishinaabe from the White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota. LaDuc also served as Ralph Nader's vice presidential running mate on the Green Party ticket in the 1996 and 2000 presidential elections. In 2007, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. And she just happens to be a cousin of East County Magazine's Tribal Beat host, Leon Thompson. In 1994, Time Magazine named Winona LaDuc one of America's 50 most promising leaders under age 40. In 1997, LaDuc was named Ms. Magazine Woman of the Year. She has also received the Reebok Human Rights Award, the Global Green Award, and the International Slow Food Award for working to protect local biodiversity. In her own community in Minnesota, she is the founder of the White Earth Land Recovery Project, one of the largest reservation-based nonprofits in the nation, working to protect indigenous plants and heritage foods such as wild rice from patenting and genetic engineering. LaDuc is a graduate of Harvard University with graduate work at MIT and Antioch University. Also a rural development economist, she has testified at numerous forums as an expert witness, and she's a lead plaintiff in Honor the Earth versus Kerry, a lawsuit against the U.S. State Department for an approval process of a tar sands pipeline. With Honor the Earth, she works nationally and internationally on issues of climate change, renewable energy, sustainable development, food systems, and environmental justice. GreenFest is a week-long series of events focused on sustainability, presented by San Diego State's Associated Students and Enviro Business Society. LaDuc's speech is slated for April 22nd, which is, appropriately, Earth Day. And you can get more information on GreenFest and Winona LaDuc's appearance there at sdsu.edu.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Lakeside's Western Days Parade and Rodeo, a harp concert at Mission Trails, and fun with physics in La Mesa.
We'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including a Spring Garden Festival, garden tours, a concert at the Desert View Tower, and Vintage Alpine, a wine-tasting experience in the country.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
Yeehaw! The 51st Annual Lakeside Rodeo takes place on April 17th through 19th. The event features Western-style entertainment and events including bronc riding, barrel racing, steer wrestling, rope competition, bull riding, and for youngsters, stick horse riding. As added attractions, world champion trick roper Ryder Kaisner will be performing. In addition, the Budweiser Clydesdale horses will make an appearance at some rodeo performances. For tickets and more information, visit lakesiderodeo.com.
The 50th Lakeside Western Days Parade will roll out on Saturday, April 18th, starting at 9:30 a.m. down Lakeside's Main Street. This year's theme is There's No Place Like Home, and the Grand Marshal is Gita Morena, granddaughter of L. Frank Baum, author of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. For the full parade lineup and route, visit lakesidechamber.org.
The City of La Mesa invites you to Fun with Physics Day on Saturday, April 18th from 9 a.m. to noon at the La Mesa Boys and Girls Teen Club. Experiments include bubbles, sink or float, oobleck, dry ice experiments, barges, and more. For information, visit themesaparks.org.
The San Diego Harp Society concert will be held at 3 p.m. on Sunday, April 19th, at the Visitor Center Theater at Mission Trails Regional Park. Four accomplished young local harpists will be represented at the San Diego Harp Society for the concert. The performers include Stefano Comignoli, a 16-year-old who has been playing harp since he was 8 years old. He has performed at the White House, Carnegie Hall, Kennedy Center, and the World Harp Congress in Sydney, Australia. Admission is free. For information about the concert, as well as the park, you can go to mtrp.org.
Get ready to rev up. Cajon Classic Cruises is rolling out its 2015 season starting Wednesday, April 22nd, with a full street closure for opening night. The cruises will continue all summer long on Wednesday nights from 5 until 8 p.m. The second week, April 29th, will celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Other highlights include Jimmy Johnson Night, a military tribute, and Thunder on Main Street. For the full Cajon Classic Cruises season lineup, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Rock and roll superstar Chubby Checker will perform a concert with a twist April 23rd at 8 p.m. in Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater. Checker rocketed to fame in 1960 when his recording of The Twist was the number one song in the nation, sparking a new dance craze in variations such as the Peppermint Twist and Twist and Shout. He is the only artist ever to have 5 albums in the top 12 at one time and the only artist to have a song hit number one twice, The Twist. He won a Grammy for Best Rock Performance and went on to record more hit songs such as Limbo Rock, attracting a new generation of fans. For tickets, visit sequan.com.
Like honeybees to a hive, the public swarms Cuyamaca College each year for its immensely popular Spring Garden Festival. This year, the 22nd annual free event takes place on Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. From urban farming to landscaping ideas, the festival is the place to go to learn about sustainability. The event showcases the college's ornamental horticulture program, as well as the Water Conservation Garden and Heritage of the Americas Museum on campus. Over 50 vendors, craftspeople, and artisans will be present. In addition, activities, exhibits, tours, demonstrations of sustainable gardening and landscaping will be offered. For more information, go to cuyamaca.edu/springfest2015.
Friends of the East County will host a garden tour on Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The tour features 5 gardens with an amazing variety of settings, including water-wise gardens, themed parks, flowering plants, including a 1-acre rose garden, and vendors offering crafts and garden creations. Friends of East County Arts, Inc. is a nonprofit philanthropic organization that supports the performing and fine arts in East County. For garden tour tickets, call Christy Clock at 619-442-8515 or visit friendsofecarts.org.
The 18th Annual Sage and Songbird Garden Tour on May 1st through the 3rd will feature 5 private home gardens, plus a hummingbird haven and a raptor rehabilitation facility for close-up viewing of wildlife. The tour includes water-wise plants such as succulents and native plants from Australia, the Mediterranean, and California, as well as garden-related vendor, plant sales, music, live butterfly releases, plus cruising critters, reptiles, and insects. For tickets and a schedule, visit chirp.org.
The second annual Inkopa Classic Desert Concert will be held on May 2nd. This outdoor high desert concert will be held at the Desert View Tower, a state historical monument perched on a rocky hillside overlooking the Anza Borrego Desert. The Inkopa offers music lovers and naturalists alike a chance to experience an overnight event featuring multiple bands within our southwest region. For tickets and details, visit inkopa2.brownpapertickets.com.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present 2 for the show on Sunday, May 3rd at 3 p.m. at College Avenue Baptist Church. The concert features 2 major chorale works, Gioncino Rossini's Sabbat Mater and John Ritter's Feel the Spirit. For tickets, visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
The 25th Annual Vintage Alpine will be held on Sunday, May 3rd from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs. Vintage Alpine will feature tastings of 40 wines plus foods from fine restaurants across our region. This event attracts over 500 people annually, with all proceeds used to benefit services and programs for the children of San Diego. Vintage Alpine, a wine experience in the country, is presented by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine Foundation. This event is limited to persons 21 years of age and up. Tickets can be reserved at vintagealpine.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. The Lakeside Rodeo is coming up this weekend, and we thought you'd enjoy a replay of our interview from last year with Lakeside's Rodeo Clown.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip, to the hospital. I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant, and then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter, and then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks, and so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what, prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was, I tried to be a bull rider, thought maybe I could make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we bucked some bulls and stuff, and so we took turns being the bullfighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so he can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple of things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that one. Puts you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said, early on, it is just the satisfaction that you did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players, but it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer, so you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your...
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed-off bull, because, you know, that happens to me a lot. Give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they've got a big old body and they got to bend in half to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get to break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. You have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring them away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say, that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school. And the guidance counselor, I've noticed, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern-day rodeo, we have schools And the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah. What's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay. The barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena. Actually, not quite the middle, it's a little closer to the bucking shoes. And it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land. They can come there, catch their breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously, on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's gonna do what he wants to do. He's gonna do this. So you're gonna be put in a position where you're gonna get in there that you're probably gonna get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I've never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Yeah, Cody.
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors, you see if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it, and that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow the cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, Jim Hannibal. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.